With all the job layoffs these days, many people are looking for ways to bring in some cash. Could be freelancing maybe the way to go. How do you make it as a freelancer, creating your own business and negotiating contracts? Michelle Goodman has some ideas. She's the author of a new book called My So-Called Freelance Life. Hi, Michelle. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about freelancing today. What sort of freelancing jobs are out there?
You know, any job that could support a business could be a freelance job. It's not just the creative fields. People traditionally know freelancing as writing and editing and design and illustration and photography, but also executive assistants or virtual assistants, project managers, producers, lawyers, you know, even people taking care of your pets or your plants.
All sorts of web stuff, I imagine.
Oh, all kinds of programming, web design. Now there's all the, you know, search engine optimization gurus and, you know, Twitter gurus.
What about like manual labor or trade sort of jobs? Are those freelanceable also?
You know, if you're doing landscaping or handy person work one-on-one for individual small businesses and homes, sure. But, you know, there's a lot of traditional trade jobs that you can, you know, you go through the normal apprentice and hiring route. But yeah, there's lots of people that can work on your home one-on-one.
So you're a freelance writer. Right?
I am a freelance writer.
Okay, so is that how you plan things to work out, or did you find yourself looking for work and you became then a freelance
writer? I actually became a freelance writer intentionally 17 years ago. And it was sort of just a rebellious thing. You know, I felt like 9 a.m. was the middle of the night. I didn't want to work for anyone else. But that's sort of a typical lament of young office workers, but I just vowed to not be a staff person anymore. And it was a little bumpy in the beginning. This was before the web, you know, made it easy to connect with clients and freelancers and jobs and all that. But I did manage to pull it together.
We'll take your calls if you have any questions or experiences about freelancing. Join us at 206-543-5869 or 1-800-289-5869. How does one find freelance work? Once you kind of decide what you're going to do, then what do you do next?
Well, absolutely, you know, make your presence known on the web, even if it's a one-page portfolio site. Email the link to everyone you know and do, you know, if you're on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter, do a blast to everyone. You should, you know, have some sort of presence on the web. It's really helpful for people to find you that way and to look at your past experience and your testimonials and your work samples if you have that. You'll hear people in the media say all the time, oh, freelancing's so easy. You just go to a website like guru.com or Elance and get a job. But it's not quite that simple. I mean, a lot of you really have to hunt and pick through a lot of low-paying or bad-sounding jobs when you're just relying on the web. And, you know, one of the greatest things to do is to get super networked as quickly as possible with both other freelancers, small businesses, any businesses you're interested in. You know, go to industry meetings for fields you're interested in. And there's some sites in town that make it easy to find where people are mingling. You know, there's a site called iloveseattle.org. And that lists just about every professional association in town. So all these associations have meetings and they have newsletters, and a lot of people get jobs through, you know, these email lists or at least leads that way. And then there's also a great site that was started here, but it's national, called biznic.com. And it's a social networking site for independent professionals, and they have face-to-face events all the time.
And how's Biznic spelled?
biznik.com.
All right, so I imagine you have to have a business plan, right? What does that business plan need to look like?
You know, a business plan is a great thing to have, but I think it sounds so daunting to people. It doesn't have to be like this 30-page paperweight. It can just be one page of, you know, here are my immediate goals, but they shouldn't be so pie in the sky and lofty as, you know, I want to be published in the New York Times by the end of the year. It should be broken down into bite-sized pieces. You know, this month I am going to contact 10 regional magazine editors on the West Coast and start networking. And then next month I'm going to, you know, update my website and things like that. And, you know, next month I'm going to go to more networking events and I'm going to make a point of meeting 5 new freelancers. So just, you know, your little goals spelled out for you so you can't run and hide and blow them off. And another thing I think it's really important to put down is the money, because a lot of people will just think, oh, it'll just happen. And, you know, hopefully now people are budgeting all the time and figuring out what they need to live on. But for freelancing, it's doubly important because when you first start out, if you don't have a job, a day job to back you up or a part-time job to back you up, it can be a while. It can be a few months before you get a full-time schedule. So you really need to know what you need to live on, how much money you need to live on, how much money your expenses are, and how much money you need to make. And it's important to have those numbers staring you in the face.
We're talking about freelancing with Michelle Goodman. She's the author of a book called My So-Called Freelance Life. I'd like to hear from you if you have some questions about freelancing or some experiences, advice yourself that you'd like to share. 206-543-5869. Let's bring Liz Andrade into this conversation. Liz is a freelance web designer and blogger. Her website is cmdshiftdesign.com. I hope I got that right. Hi, Liz.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Oh, just great, thanks. Tell me about your freelancing experience.
I went freelance about a year and a half. I was working at a small Seattle firm doing web design, and I was actually kind of interviewing for some other full-time positions when one of my interviewers asked me, what do you want to be doing in 10 years from now? And I said, well, I'd like to start my own business and do freelance. And their response was, well, why don't you just do that right now? And when I realized I didn't have an answer to that, I walked out of the interview thinking, well, I'm not going to find a new 9-to-5. I'm going to start my own business. And that's what I did.
Has it been successful for you, or were there ups and downs? How did it work out?
There are ups and downs, but I've been doing great. I mean, it's been a year and a half, and I'm, you know, growing steadily each month, able to, you know, keep a new client base coming in as time goes on. And I think it's the greatest thing I've done. I'm really happy.
What do you think the key to success is, Liz?
I think you have to really be passionate about your work if you're going to do freelance, because, you know, you have to be able to self-motivate. There's no one that's going to show up and hand you work to do. You have to go out and find it, and you have to, you know, be willing to do kind of the dirty work and market yourself and meet people. And it's only you that's going to keep your business going. No one else is going to be able to do it for you.
Do you have any other advice for someone thinking about striking out on their own?
You know, there's a lot of there's a really great freelance community online, and I would suggest getting involved in that. There's so many people, be it web designers or writers or programmers in the freelance community, who are really active online, and everyone's very supportive and very eager to share their knowledge. So I would definitely suggest getting involved in that community.
All right, Liz. Well, thank you very much. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
Michelle Goodman, any response to what Liz had to say?
Yeah, I completely agree with Liz, and I have seen her online, and, you know, there's a lot of freelancers that hang out on Twitter. I know not everybody is on Twitter, but there's even weekly chats for various different freelance groups, writers, designers. A site that we both frequent is called freelancewitch.com, and there's tons of advice and conversations going on there. You know, even independent blogs like mine and Liz's, freelancers commune in places like that. And one thing I'll say is, you know, people think that, oh, I probably shouldn't mingle with the competition. I mean, you know, we're all fighting for the same jobs, but actually, as much, if not more, than a satisfied client, a lot of freelancers get their work from other freelancers. I mean, a designer may, you know, need to recommend a writer to a client, or I may need to find a junior writer who's less far along than me to refer to a job that I'm not interested in, or that I've, you know, don't do that kind of work anymore. So it's definitely good to be connected with lots of other freelancers. And plus, we bounce ideas off each other all the time and kind of hold each other's hands and talk each other off the ledge on the bad days that, I will say, you know, just like any office worker, we do have them.
Chrissy in West Seattle, do you have some questions or thoughts on freelancing?
Yeah, my husband did some freelance work for a while as a blogger. And one thing that we didn't anticipate when he made an income request was how much we would be paying in taxes out of our own pockets. And so one thing that we learned about freelancing is to consider that when you are requesting a certain income.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, when they first start freelancing, they think, oh, well, I made $50,000 a year at my staff job, which translates roughly into $25 an hour. So that's what I'll charge as a freelancer. But that is a big fat mistake. You need to, you know, double it or more, because you need to factor in the taxes, because clients don't take your taxes out. You pay them yourself. There may be city or state taxes, although they're fairly nominal around here when you're making below $50,000 or so a year. You need to, you know, you need to be paying for your own benefits like health insurance and retirement. And freelancers don't necessarily always work 40 billable hours a week. You know, we may be working 25 or 30 and the rest of the time is spent marketing. If we are working 40 billable hours a week, we're probably working 10 hours or more on top of that, looking for work and handling invoices and dealing with contracts and all that. So all those things have to factor into your rate, and you need to bump it up to account for them.
Chrissy, good tip. Thanks for the call. We're talking about freelancing. Michelle Goodman is in, and she wrote a book called My So-Called Freelance Life. We'd like to hear your questions or experiences. Lori joins us from Ferndale. Hello, Lori.
Good day. How are you both?
Great. Thanks.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi. I've been a sign language interpreter freelance for about 20 years. And one thing I wanted to reiterate is what Michelle was just talking about. You know, you definitely have to factor in your gas, your time. I mean, the liability insurance, the taxes, all of that raises, it has to be considered to raise into your rate, because otherwise you kind of just wind up working for a couple bucks an hour and you don't realize it when it comes time to, you know, figure out your checkbook, and that's all you've got left because you have all of these other expenses. And another point would be also contracts. Mm-hmm. You know, when you've got a job, you might really want to consider having some kind of contract, because as a freelancer, they figure, well, I don't have a whole host of attorneys behind me, so they're not going to come after me for the $150, $300. And then you can't go after them because you don't have a contract and you may not have proof that they actually owe this. And then you've got to go through the whole small claims, and it really can become quite involved. You know, over 20 years, I've been stiffed a few times.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lori, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And Michelle, as far as contracts, what's the best way to do those?
Contracts, again, that's another thing that sounds more daunting than it has to be. You know, there's lots of samples in the books and products on a website called nolo.com, N-O-L-O.com. But a contract can be as simple as an email that you and the client both agree to. If it's a simple project, what you want to stipulate is, you know, deadlines for when things are due. The client's getting material to you if you're doing, you know, a website and you need to be getting written material and photos for them, when things are due to them, how many revisions are involved, all the particulars, who's going to pay for expenses, when you're going to be paid. So all the dates and payments and all the nitty-gritty details. And you can't be too detailed, but it definitely can save you. I mean, a lot of times we're working on so many projects, we don't even remember what we've agreed to, what the deadline is. So it's nice to have it in writing for that reason. And yes, it can help back you up if you ever, unfortunately, do need to go to court or something.
M. Joe in Northgate, you have a freelance tip for us?
Yes, I do. Hi. August 1st will be 10 years that since I started my business. I have an independent bookkeeping service, and I work specifically with small businesses, with entrepreneurs. And I wanted to really stress to new entrepreneurs to look into how much taxes they owe quarterly, where they get a very nasty surprise the first year after they file their taxes. They can often end up owing thousands of dollars if they're not careful about.
Yeah, and in fact, the IRS likes to collect interest, too, if you're not keeping up with your quarterly payments. And it's just so much easier to pay as you go. I know people have a problem, you know, forking over $1,000 to $5,000 or whatever it is every quarter. It can hurt, but it's the same as an employer taking it out. You're just now responsible for it yourself. But, yeah, you've absolutely got to keep up with it.
Thanks, M. Joe. Job layoffs are frequent these days, and so many people are turning to freelancing or thinking about it, and that's why we're talking about it right now with Michelle Goodman. She wrote a book on it called My So-Called Freelance Life. Some of the steps you can take if you want to become a freelancer and pitfalls to avoid. So if you have some experiences that you can share with us, that would be great. 543-5869 or questions. Dolores in Lakewood, do you have a question for us?
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm new to Seattle, and I've been a former English teacher. And do you know how or if my past experiences can be used for editing of manuscripts, pamphlets, brochures?
If you have editing experience, absolutely. I mean, another thing you can do is coach people that need help, you know, either with their thesis papers or somebody that's breaking into writing that may need help. You could tutor kids. But there is a whole community of people out there that are getting paid to edit people's manuscripts, either one-on-one with individual writers or formally with book publishers. So, yeah, that's definitely an option.
Good luck, Dolores. Thanks for the call. Michelle, one thing you write about in your book, you say, not a good idea to work at home. Why not?
Well, actually, I do recommend that people start working at home because it's free and cheap. But there are so many distractions at home that can be the pitfall. I mean, the TV, the YouTube, you know, the Michael Jackson memorial that's been going on for months and months or so, it seems. But I've worked at home this whole time. I work in a separate room now, and it's definitely helpful to have a room or even a space where it's all your own, where you can shut the curtain or the door and nobody can mess with your stuff. And you get some separation of work-life balance. You leave at the end of the day. But I think the biggest pitfall is the distractions.
Ellen in Enumclaw, what's your question about freelancing?
Hi. I'm a writer who is just getting started in a freelance arena. And I was wondering if you can protect your ideas. For instance, if I have a proposal for an article or series of articles for somebody with a online or local magazine or whatever, if she likes the idea, what's to stop her from not hiring me to do it, but to take the idea and ask somebody else to do it?
You know, this is a question that a lot of new freelance writers ask and worry about. And I would say just don't worry about it that much. It doesn't happen very often. And on the flip side, if you saw, I'm on some lists where all kinds of writers are pitching ideas. Everybody's doing the same ideas. So it's extremely likely that either another freelancer or the editor is going to come up with the same idea as you. So to protect yourself, don't give away everything. You know, give the pitch and give some information about how you would go about researching the article and possibly who you would interview. But don't give everything away. Keep some things close to your vest.
Ellen, thanks for the phone call. And Michelle Goodman, thank you for coming in.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Michelle Goodman is a Shoreline resident, right? And she's the author of a new book called My So-Called Freelance Life. If you'd like to find out more about freelancing, go to our website, kuow.org, and you can do a keyword search on freelancing.